Unlock the past and safeguard your memories with scanmyphotos.com. Here's our special promo code, GODIGITAL, to get a whopping up to 50% off your photo scanning order. Don't let your cherished moments fade away. Digitize them now with precision and care. Whether it's old slides, photos, or films, bring them into the digital age and relive those precious memories. This is an affiliate promotion, meaning we may earn a commission if you take advantage of this fantastic deal. Act fast, preserve your history, and save big with Go Digital at scanmyphotos.com. Hi, I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them, from the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. My guest today is Will Hansen of the Newbery Library Chicago. Will, thank you so much for being on the Photo Detective.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us something about yourself, what your job is.
Yeah, so I am Director of Reader Services and Curator of Americana at the Newbery Library in Chicago. So I supervise our reference staff and help keep our reading rooms and the services we provide to folks using our collections running smoothly. And as Curator of Americana, I collect and help to interpret our collections for U.S. history and culture, American Indian and Indigenous studies, which we have a great collection for, and the history of the Americas more broadly, so Latin American history and other aspects of the history of the Americas.
Right. So that's everything, right? Print, non-print. I mean,
it is print and manuscript, although I have a lot of help. We have a curator for local and family history specifically who focuses on genealogy research. We have a curator of maps, and we have a curator for modern manuscript collections, so archival collections, including a lot of photo collections. So we work collaboratively all the time on lots of things, a curator for history of printing as well. The Americas cover a lot of ground, so I certainly couldn't do it by myself. I do collect print and manuscript material and photo material as well, but in a lot of collaborative ways. So it's by no means just me.
Is there a time frame for it?
Yeah, we typically say our collection covers about six centuries. So we collect from the 15th century to the 21st century. The Americas collection really does go back to, you know, we have the original Latin edition of Christopher Columbus's printed letter back to Ferdinand and Isabella, all the way to 21st century collections. Some things that we collect, we have a more specific collecting time period, but we really think of it as a broad collection that covers that whole span of, you know, 1400s to 2000s. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize the collection was that expansive.
It is a large collection. We have something like 1.6 million books. We have millions of manuscript pages. I can't remember the number of linear feet, but tens of thousands of linear feet of archival collections. You know, one of the largest postcard collections in the world, which we might talk about a little bit later. One of the largest sheet music collections in the country. Lots of other stuff besides. Maps, something like 600,000 maps in the building. There's a lot of stuff here. Yep.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. I mean, obviously, I know of the Newbery. I've worked in the nonprofit field for a couple of libraries and a historical society. But recently, I saw an interview with you on CBS News about a very important photo collection that the library had just acquired. Can we talk a little bit about that and why it's important and how it came to be at the library?
Sure. Yeah. We were very excited when we were able to acquire this collection and make it available. It's a collection of 44 glass lantern slides that document the Great Migration, the migration of African Americans from the South to northern cities, in particular urban areas in the early 20th century. The slides were made around 1922 or 1923. And as far as we know, it's the most complete set anywhere of these that is known to exist. I really haven't found other sets of these in any sort of public collections. So they're pretty exciting. Yeah.
Was this a purchase or a gift?
Yeah, we did purchase these. It was actually an auction. We won them at auction back in October of 2022. So last year. Yep.
So for anyone that doesn't understand what a lantern slide is, I mean, these are slides before we had those little Kodak ones that we put in the carousel.
Yep. Yeah, 35 millimeter slides, those sort of Kodak slides sort of made these obsolete in some ways. Glass lantern slides were what preceded them. And in some ways, I mean, they are certainly incredibly beautiful. It most people would agree, more beautiful than those 35 millimeter slides that we're all used to are. It's also a much more expensive process. So these are slides that are a photo on a sheet of glass. It's a positive image on a sheet of glass. They're black and white and then hand colored. So one of the reasons that they're incredibly beautiful is that hand coloring, which is as vibrant today as it was 100 years ago when they were made. But they're also quite labor intensive. You then sandwich it with another layer of glass, and you typically there's like a black tape around the edge of them to hold it all together. And then you would put that in front of what was known as a magic lantern to project the image. So it was a sort of early way of projecting an image. The combination of motion pictures and those sort of 35 millimeter slides kind of made them obsolete by like the 20s and 30s, I would say. These are actually pretty late for glass lantern slides, but in an interesting way.
So as a former curator of non-print materials, you know, I've seen my share of lantern slides. Do you know if this particular set was made for a purpose? Now, the reason I'm asking is because I know about lantern slide collections that were made for entertainment. Like yep. It was advertised in the newspaper. Come see the polar ice caps. Yeah. Yep. Come see the polar bears and sit with us and be entertained. And people were like awestruck by them. Like these are real. This is what we're seeing. What about these that document this particular segment of the population in Chicago?
Yeah, one of the things that was so interesting to us about these is that they're a set that was put together for a specific purpose and used for a specific purpose. So they were put together by actually the Methodist Episcopal Church and a particular committee within the Methodist Episcopal Church that was involved with their mission activities that was based in Chicago here. These slides were actually produced out of a building a few blocks from the Newbury on Rush Street in Chicago. And they put together this set, which has a title. The title is The Negro in the City. And they were used to promote the kinds of efforts that the Methodist Episcopal Church was making to reach out to a variety of populations. So they did glass lantern sets of slides like this for a number of topics and would make them available to church congregations and similar kinds of groups within the Methodist Episcopal Church to share to their congregations. I think for fundraising, first and foremost, they were hoping to raise funds to support the kinds of activities they were doing to support these populations and to kind of promote those activities themselves for folks who might want to take part in those activities. So the slides document the kinds of things that the church was doing to support the great migrate folks who were moving to the northern cities as part of the Great Migration. And part of that was also saying, you know, here's what we can do, here's how we can help, here's the services that are available. So I think those were the two main reasons. And I think they were most often shown in, you know, churches themselves or community centers connected to churches, church basements, you know, potlucks, those sorts of things. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Educational and promotional.
Yeah.
Do you know if this set is unique? I mean, it's the only one that you have found, right?
Yeah.
But were multiple copies of this made to be sent out to other Methodist Episcopal churches? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I am pretty sure there were multiples made, although I haven't, like I said, I haven't actually found another set. What I do know is that, you know, they had albums of the Methodist Church had albums of photos that were drawn from to produce these sort of lantern slides. So there are some albums that have been digitized by the church that show some of these images uncolored and have the same negative numbers that appear in the pamphlet that accompanies these slides. So you can tell that they certainly intended them to make multiple copies of. And I think I may have seen a trace or two of individual slides from this set that may have been reproduced here or there, but I've never come across another body of them. Certainly wouldn't shock me if the Methodist Episcopal Church itself had a copy of these somewhere, but I think in a lot of cases they were loaned out to churches and either maybe never returned, or they just didn't make that many based on what the demand was that they had. We acquired them with the carrying case they came in, they were originally carried in, which has a sort of label on it that has the number 18 on it. And I don't know if that refers to a number 18 of, we made at least 18 sets, or if there were a variety of different slide sets that they had, and this was the number 18 set within those various slide groups. I could believe either of those, but I'm not sure which it is.
Right. And it's hard to find documentation, right? You haven't found letters within the church archives that reference these, perhaps.
Not yet. No.
And we're talking the 1920s. Pretty much anyone that would have been alive then is probably not alive now. That's 100 years ago.
Yep.
So it's fantastic. It's a wonderful find and a wonderful collection. Now, have they been digitized and are they available online?
They have. So we did make it a priority to digitize them pretty much immediately when they came in the door. Our digital imaging team does an amazing job with that. Our photographer, whose name is Catherine Gass, did an incredible job getting them through quickly. And we have great folks who do metadata for them as well. So we got them cataloged, we got photos made, and we got them fully digitized pretty quickly after they came in. We did also digitize, I think I mentioned, a pamphlet accompanies them that actually has... Essentially, it's sort of a lecture guide or aid for someone talking about the slides in the kinds of presentations we were mentioning earlier. So there's a little one paragraph caption essentially for each image that gives the information about what each image shows. So yeah, we digitized all of that, and it's all available on the Newbery's digital collection site.
How much of the Newbery collection is digitized at this point?
It's a good question, and I don't have an exact number for you. My rule of thumb is I would say it's still probably less than 5% of our entire collection that's digitized. I mean, it's not a huge number. That number still represents an awful lot of stuff. I will say that.
Well, if you have more than a million, 5% is a good number of items.
Yeah, it's an ongoing effort, and we fully intend to continue digitizing as much material as we can. But it's still a pretty small percentage, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And so people can come to the Newbery and they can do research. They can come in.
They can. Yep. We are free and open to the public. Really, the only conditions for using the collection in person, in our reading rooms at least, is that you do need to be 14 years old or in the ninth grade. And then you just need to have a research interest, basically. And we will pull out anything that you want to see from our collection. It's a non-circulating collection, of course. You can't take anything home.
Of course.
But yeah, everything is available for use here for anyone who wants to use it. I should say these slides in particular, we have restricted because of their fragility and because we were able to digitize them so quickly. So we are asking people to use the digital images if at all possible. We will certainly make exceptions if somebody needs to use the physical slides, but because they're so breakable, we have basically asked people to use the digital images.
Yeah. And I imagine you have an online catalog that people can search to see, so they can set up their research plan before they come to Chicago. Let's talk about that postcard collection. I mean, you proudly said we have the largest postcard collection in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. So it's fairly new here. We received a collection from that was formerly at a museum in the Chicago suburbs, the Lake County Discovery Museum, that is the sort of base of which is the archive of a company called Kurt Tyke. Kurt Tyke Company was at one point, I think, the largest postcard producer in the world, and certainly was one of the largest postcard producers in the world in the 20th century that was based here in Chicago. They are best known for the sort of large letter greetings from postcards. So like, you know, greetings from Asbury Park, greetings from Chicago, those sort of big letters with images of the place in them. They did not create those. They did not invent those, but they kind of perfected those. Became very well known for those and views of main streets across the U.S. and yeah, really grew by leaps and bounds through the 20th century. We're operational from the 1890s to the late 1970s, and their archive was really rescued by the, I hope I don't get this wrong, I think it's the grandson of the founder, Ralph Tyke, rescued them from being destroyed when the factory was basically going to get demolished. And Lake County Discovery Museum at that point in the late 70s stepped in to take them, went through a process of trying to find a new home for them in the mid-2010s. And the Newberry was lucky enough to sort of make the winning bid for that. So it includes that entire archive of the company, as well as lots of other individual collections of postcards put together by individual postcard collectors and other publisher-based collections as well. So we received something like 2.5 million items as part of that collection. It's a lot. It's at least something like 600,000 unique postcard images. Because it's the archive of the Tyke Company, there are lots of duplicates because it's the copies that they kept for consultation by their salesmen and other things. But the exciting thing is that it also contains the production files for the Tyke Company postcards. So it actually shows the process of how postcards got made. Photographs, all the sort of intermediary stages, correspondence with the clients in some cases. It varies from production file to production file, but about 100,000 of those postcards have production files that document the process of their making, which is also really interesting for researchers and just enthusiasts of postcards as a genre.
Wow. Makes my little postcard collection look pretty tiny. And I have a pretty big one. I collect Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun because people who have collections like that will reach out to us and say, well, you know, I have this postcard and I've always wondered how it differs from what the original photograph looked like. And if we have the production file, we can go and see, oh yeah, they moved this tree from here to here, because people think of postcards as like these sort of documentary, completely objective kind of views of a place. But particularly in the first half of the 20th century, I mean, through the whole history of postcards, they were doing lots of manipulation to make things look like they wanted.
I'm going to have to look at my Providence collection. I know I have some of those greetings from with the little pictures of the buildings.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to flip them over and see, and then search your catalog and see what you've got.
Yeah.
What else would be a very noteworthy image collection at the Newberry?
We've got a lot of great photo collections. We have some amazing photo collections from the early sort of westward expansion of the U.S. So a great Western Americana collection that includes some really great photographs by people like William Henry Jackson and Alexandra Gardner and John K. Hillers and some of the other sort of big names of photography in the West. We have an amazing collection of daguerreotypes of indigenous leaders that were done by a man named Thomas Easterly in St. Louis in the 1840s that are incredibly beautiful. Some of them are the best known images of these people, like Keokuk, the Sauk and Fox leader. Those are really stunning, as pretty much all the daguerreotypes are. And then for later things, we have one of the more fun ones is we have a collection of stereo views that was actually collected by Carl Sandburg. Sandburg, the poet, when he was young, that was actually one of his jobs, was that he sold stereo views, including stereo views of the Great Chicago Fire. So we have a collection of the stereo views of the aftermath of the fire that are actually from Carl Sandburg's collection. So those are pretty fun.
So are the stereo views just of the Chicago, or?
They're not actually. No, it's a pretty extensive stereo view collection that he amassed along with one friend of his whose name is escaping me right now. But they're views from all over, mostly U.S., but there are some international ones as well. I think the single biggest chunk of them is the Chicago Fire views. But yeah, they're from all over.
A couple of decades ago, you could go to a photo show, you know, one of those photo, you know, places where you buy images, and there were stereo views everywhere, and I didn't buy them at that time.
Yeah.
And now they're like super hard to find.
It seems like they've really gone up in price, but also, yeah, they're much scarcer to find now, it seems like.
Much scarcer to find. I know who has the biggest collection here in the state of Rhode Island. Hopefully he still has it. I know he was trying to sell it. Oh. I'm not sure I had the funds for what he wanted to sell it for, but it was pretty spectacular.
It's the same kind of story with real photo postcards. Those used to be, nobody wanted them. And now they're incredibly, I mean, in the postcard world, they're like this hot commodity and really going up in value. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I just collect Providence, Rhode Island ones to document the city. There, I did find one recently. I'd have multiple views of the same house and has
who
lived in the house on the outside. But on this recent one that I bought of this same house, on the back, the woman who lived there was a postcard collector.
Oh.
And she wrote this whole message about collecting postcards. And I was like, I have to have it. I know it's easy to get, but I have to have it. It's just too good.
Not a true duplicate. You've got that kind of provenance.
Not a true duplicate. Not a true duplicate at all.
That's great.
Will, I am going to spend a lot of time on the Newbery Library card catalog looking to see what you've got for my special interests. I want to thank you so much for being on the Photo Detective.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review, and if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too. See you next time. I'm thrilled to be offering something new. Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, these images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.